This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
In December last year, the Provincial Wind Energy Association in Saskatchewan closed its doors after 4 years of operation. The final straw for the organization was when SaskPower got permission from a natural gas power plant without triggering a federal environmental assessment. The power plant will be built at the same location where Sask Wind had been working to set up a community-owned wind solar project. James Wilt says this story says a lot about how Saskatchewan and other provinces are approaching the switchover to renewable resources. James Wilt is a Winnipeg-based freelance journalist who frequently writes for DSmog Canada and Vice Canada about energy and environmental politics. James Wilt joins me this morning from Winnipeg. Hello, James.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Tell us a bit about the wind/solar project that got sidelined by the natural gas power station.
So basically, it was a $90 million project. It was planned for just outside of Swift Current, Saskatchewan, and the plan was for it to generate around 35 megawatts of electricity, which would then be sold to Sask Power, which is the big provincial utility. And so 25 megawatts would be from wind turbines, and another 10 would be from solar panels. And the unique thing about this project is it would have been the first 100% community-owned renewable project in North America. There are projects like this in other parts of the world. This would be a real innovator for Canada and North America as a whole. And so what happened was there was a natural gas plant that was planned by Sask Power, the utility company, also near Swift Current. And it was worth $700 million, and it's been planned for a few years. And what Saskwind was really petitioning for the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency to do a federal environmental assessment, just for any major project that could have long-term implications on the environment. The Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency decided to pass on the federal review. And so shortly after that, Saskwind decided to shut its doors because they've been working for a really long time to make this happen. And it was sort of interpreted by them as a signal that SaskPower really isn't interested in community-based renewables, and it will proceed with, utility-scale natural gas and even coal-fired power for the foreseeable future. So that's where it's at now. Saskwind is shut down. The $90 million project is dead.
Now, did Saskwind and its community vision get support from the province over its 4 years of operation?
James Glennie, the founder of Saskwind, who I talked to, said not really at all. He had some pretty harsh words about SaskPower. His interactions sounded quite tense from SaskPower's end, and they just didn't really seem to express any sort of interest in this innovative idea of having community-owned renewables. There is the 2030 target, which the Saskatchewan government has established to reach 50% generating capacity of renewables by 2030, which is an admirable goal, but it's going to be attained via utility scale, and so that's really what SaskPower is focusing on now and in the near future, is these really quite large wind farms and solar farms, whereas what Saskwind was proposing was something a lot smaller and engaged more of the local community in the process, which would hopefully lead to better buy-in in the long run.
You mentioned earlier about that the gas plant didn't require the federal assessment. Now, why? Can you give us some more details about why that wasn't, why they didn't have to do the federal environmental assessment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's really at the discretion of the agency itself. So if it, and the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency's mandate and responsibilities are being reviewed by the federal government right now because there was a big shakeup, and that's putting it mildly, in 2012, where a lot of the ways that Canada does environmental assessments got undermined. And this also includes the National Energy Board and, the Fisheries Act and all these sorts of things. But effectively, Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency had the choice whether they, would mandate a federal environmental assessment, which would, take more time. It would mean that the proponent, SaskPower, would have to wait a bit longer before they would be able to proceed. And one of Sask Wind's big contentions and one of the reasons why they were pushing for it is that it's going to emit a lot more, plenty more emissions than a renewable project would, which is not only, detrimental to Saskatchewan and Canada's climate targets, but it's also going to cost more in the long run once the, national carbon price comes in and reaches its peak in 2022 at $50 per ton. And so, and then there's other issues as well, including, use of water and all these sorts of things. Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency had the choice. They decided not to, which effectively means that it's at the province's discretion to proceed. And because it's a provincial project, it's a guarantee that it's going to go ahead.
And it's ironic, the name, the title of the natural gas plant, it's Chinook.
Chinook, yeah, it is really interesting, actually. Given, obviously, in Alberta, the famous Chinooks are wind. That's a really good point.
There's been a big push for renewable energy in Ontario now. How has the wind and solar policies in Ontario been received there?
Yeah, well, that's a very relevant point to something that, sort of community scale renewable proponents will point to, is that the Ontario sort of renewable rollout was done primarily by utility scale renewables. And there was a small push for a while to get some community scale renewables in the game. But as Chris Turner, who's a pretty renowned environmental policy writer, pointed out in a Walrus article from a few years ago, that it really got sidelined after a few years. The whole feed-in tariff to really incentivize community-owned power just really backlogged. It wasn't a priority for the utility company itself. And so it was chiefly done by these very large-scale projects. And, as we've seen, there's been enormous opposition, posed by local community groups. Some are real concerns around, prices, which aren't all to do with renewables, but it can be argued that there's something to do with it, because there's also, necessary improvements to grid infrastructure and refurbishment of nuclear plants. And, there's all these sorts of, cost things that are difficult to separate. And then there's impacts on migratory birds, which has also been a concern in some parts of Saskatchewan. But then there's also some, really far out, concerns about, impacts on things like headaches or insomnia or, a lot of what could be sort of described as, pseudoscience. Regardless of the actual rationale, there's been a huge resistance to the way that the Ontario rollout has happened. A lot of municipalities felt that they were being, pushed around, that the decisions were ultimately being made by the province, which is always, a recipe for problems, even as we've seen with the amalgamation of Toronto, way back, it can really lead to a lot of animosity and a lot of inefficiencies and all these sorts of things. So that's where these community scale projects come in, is that they're trying to argue, look, this is going to present a different form of power. It's going to look very different. So why don't we engage the community not only in this, concept of consultations, but, in direct ownership and, these people having direct say in how these things run and operate.
What has Ontario had to change in response to all this opposition that they've received?
Well, Ontario's basically, completely backed away from a lot of, sort of their plans. In September, the province actually scrapped almost $4 billion worth of future renewable procurements, and this is sort of following a number of years of really, really vehement opposition from community groups. And then there was another issue that came up, I believe, in late September or October, where a NAFTA tribunal awarded Windstream Energy almost $30 million. And this was after Ontario, sort of pushed back plans for offshore wind development for a number of different reasons. And so there is a lot of wind capacity in Ontario now. There's almost 4,000 megawatts, which is really quite significant. But it's come at the cost of a lot of community support. And so when, you know, proponents of Saskatchewan or Alberta or elsewhere look to this example, they say, you know, we think that this can be done better. It won't generate as much power per project necessarily, but that's just by the nature of community scale. It just happens in a smaller fashion. And so, you know, who knows what the future of renewables is in Ontario? You know, Kathleen Wynne obviously has an election coming up, which could be, lost quite easily. And so I think that her government is probably fairly playing it fairly conservative about what the, what next steps are for this highly controversial sector.
So this story is more than just a failed community project in Saskatchewan.
Absolutely, yeah. I think it's a pretty good sort of analogy for what's happening across the country, because Alberta is also doing its push towards 30% renewables by 2030, and it's sort of approaching it in the same way. But the difference, I would say, there is that there just haven't really been any pushes in the same way for community-owned wind, because Saskatchewan had really been working at the grassroots for a long time. And their next steps were really depending on whether they could, come to a power purchase agreement, or what's known as a PPA, with Saskpower. And at that point, then they would go out and, begin to secure equity from people. But now we'll never know. The interest was definitely there, but we will never know. And so this is also sort of manifested in a slightly different way in BC as well, where the Canadian, Wind Energy Association pulled out in February of last year because they sensed that there was no need for wind power with the introduction of Site C and all these sorts of things. And so, there's a number of different situations playing out across the country, but I think Saskatchewan's quite a good one, because it does have, world-class wind resources. If you're going to do it anywhere, set up in Saskatchewan, and then, you could even export to other jurisdictions such as Alberta, which is trying to phase out its coal, or, other spots. And so, yeah, I think it's a bit of a complex situation, because, at first glance, it can be tough to, why is utility scale so bad? But then you do look at the instance of Ontario, and you do look at what happens when you don't involve community, and it can really be quite detrimental to the long-term push for more renewables.
Indeed, James, it's a complex story, and we really appreciate you taking the time this morning to deconstruct it for us.
For sure, yeah, anytime.
James Wilt is a Winnipeg-based freelance journalist who frequently writes for Desmog Canada and Vice Canada about energy and environmental politics. His recent article, How Saskatchewan is Driving Small Wind Producers Out of the Market, appeared on Desmog Canada on January 4th.